It's a pleasure to be in your midst after a very long time and to share with you what Baba has been blessing us with. Actually, I was scheduled to give a class on 23rd on how we can derive maximum benefit from Murli. But later in a meeting, as I understood, the topic was changed and I was asked to speak or to give a series of classes, three classes in all, on the topic God. Perhaps I misunderstood it, I don't know. Still I am open, but I think it would be better if I give a class on the subject God today. Maybe if you want me to say something about the benefits, how to get the maximum benefits from Murli, that could be tomorrow or day after. Now, so far as the topic God is concerned, Baba also said we must first of all know the Alif, the Alpha. This is the first thing which everyone, every human being must know, God. Now, if we just begin with this subject, we find there are actually three kinds of people. There are believers, there are non-believers, and there are agnostics. So very often we come with any one of these categories. Some people are not interested at all in talking about God. There was a time when scientists were very much against saying something on this subject in their academic circles. They thought if a scientist believes in the existence of God, he is perhaps not a scientist. Times are now changing. There are agnostics who say that we don't have a final proof, a perfect logic, foolproof evidence, so that we may believe that there is God. So it is not that we say that there is no God, neither do we say that there is God. We are non-committed. So they are agnostics. They say there are certain reasons which appeal to us, but there are people who speak against us, against this subject, against the existence of God, and we find that what they say also has some meaning, some force, some logic, some reasoning. So we are not decided, not committed as yet. Others are hardcore atheists. They vehemently oppose those who believe in God. Now, I'll take up all these three. But if we take first of all the believers, we find there are two categories among them, even among the believers. There is a category of those people who believe it on philosophical grounds. They are intellectuals, scholarly people, who reason things out, who enter into arguments, logic, and it is on that basis they believe there is God. And the other one is the category in which people are worshippers, bhaktas. They have some sentimental love for God. They don't want to enter into many arguments. They say somehow they believe that there is God and there is no need of entering into any arguments at all. So there are two kinds. I will first take up those who believe in God on the basis of philosophy. They give so many arguments. But I will try to bring this point to light that ultimately they believe in God because of some value in Him. You will be surprised that even those who believe in God and those who don't believe in God, they believe in values, all of them. Those who don't believe in God, they assert certain values. Those who believe in God, they assert another set of values. So we have to keep this in mind. What are the values for which they seek God. Because if God were of no value to them, no use to them, if it were a futile pursuit, why should they seek Him? Naturally they think that this is of some value to them, some benefit to them. Therefore they want to know about Him. Now all the philosophical arguments also ultimately lead you to this truth that their arguments are based on certain values. So we have to either accept those values or reject those values, or they are perhaps wrong arguments for good values, or right arguments for right values, that each one has to decide. Now take for example, when I was saying about the people who have philosophical bent of mind, who are rational, they for example would say that there is a system in this world. Everything is systematic. The galaxies, the movement of the earth around the sun, and the growth of the flora and fauna, and everything as a matter of fact, they are so interlinked, so interconnected, and all things happening at the same time, in some order, in some organized way. They say there is a system, and anything which is systematic, well organized, could not be without some wise person behind it. After all, it has not come of its own. There must be someone behind this who has created this system. So their value is system. They say that system is the main thing. And they believe in God because they say He must be the wisest person. Even to make a small invention and to make it work, and to make it work for a very long time, requires some kind of caliber, some kind of ability, some kind of special knowledge, some expertise, some know-how. And God, who is running this world, all the things in a systematic manner, must be the wisest person. So the other value which they assert is wisdom. System and wisdom. And since there is wisdom behind it and system behind it, so there must be someone who is the wisest. Because there is geology, biology, psychology and so many other branches of knowledge behind all this system. This system is not so simple. It's so complex, so complicated. One has to know so many arts and sciences, so many things. Otherwise this system could not have occurred. Someone who systematizes them, organizes them in this fashion, he must be having so comprehensive knowledge. We in our universities study, say, some one discipline, but we do not know much or anything about another discipline. But this one who has given this system some order to the whole universe, so that everything is happening on time, in order, in a particular fashion, so he must be all knowledgeful. So another aspect, another value on which they emphasize is knowledge. Some people distinguish between knowledge and wisdom. So he has both knowledge as well as wisdom. The theoretical knowledge as well as the practical wisdom. How to do things, he knows this. And that is the main argument, they say, why they believe in God. It could not have happened on its own, as I said earlier. And they say there is some planning. There could be no system without planning. So there must be some planning behind it. Someone who has planned it. And he must be a good manager, a good organizer. We are teaching people the management course. So he already knows it. So many management courses. How things can be managed in a proper way. So, and he knows how to administer. So this is an administration. You may have so many things with you, enough of resources with you, human resources, material resources and so on. But if you don't organize them properly, don't manage them properly, or do not administer things properly, everything will go awry. It would not work as you would like them to work. But he has all this. So we must know such a person. He must be wonder, the greatest wonder. So if we don't know him, it is shame for us. What do we know about other things? What is the use? This is the first thing we must know about. So they assault on this, these values and the purpose behind this pursuit. Why we should know God? And they say, now those who are against it, they say, how you say that God is the wisest? How you say that things are systematic? There are many catastrophes in the world. So many things happen not to our taste. They cause so much suffering to the humanity. There are stark cases of starvation at many places. And so on, so many things. So they are against it. They say, why we say there is no God is because there is no system. You see. Give contrary arguments, opposite arguments, and they say there is no system. God has been doing great blunders. He is bungling, you see. How you say there is system? He is mismanaging if he has created the world. There are many poor people, he does not take care of them. Is this administration? A good administration must look after the people properly. And there are people who are suffering, and God does not take care of them. If he could not, why did he create the world? So there is no God. You see. If he is the wisest, he should have created some good thing. There are 50% people who are suffering a lot. Almost everyone is suffering as a matter of fact. But 50% due to poverty, unemployment, and the malnourishment, and many things because of these. And they say, if all this thing is happening, you call such a person the wisest. A wise person will do things like that. So your definition of wisest perhaps differs from us. We beg to differ. Therefore, we don't believe in God. So they gave the opposite arguments that there is no God. Then there is another kind of, and they say, well, if God is the wisest, God is the perfect manager, the administrator, one who plans, one who systematizes, one who organizes. Okay, he must be, maybe, but then he must be a cruel person. You see. There are people in this world who have got this planning. Even Hitler knew how to plan things. Even he systematized certain things. There are people who know these arts. But if they have no compassion, no love for the people, no mercy upon them, then why you call them the wisest? They say that if there is God, okay then, he must be the cruel person and therefore we have nothing to do with him. Let him alone and let us alone. So therefore, they say we are non-believers. We don't believe in God. Ultimately, we will come to what Baba says, you see. To take us out of this jungle, the arguments, the forest of arguments, where people have been counting trees, you know, endlessly reaching nowhere and getting astray in the whole process. But Baba takes us out of all this. That I will come to later. But this is why some people say that they are non-believers. The other people say, we are believers. Then, there is another one, argument from design. Some people say there is design in this world. Now, take the case of dust, loose dust for example, or pieces of stones here, there and everywhere, thistles and thorns scattered on the ground. So many things lying haphazard, without any arrangement. But in this case, they say, there is design. The eyes are of particular shape. This nose, that also of course is a particular shape. The whole body, it is designed properly for our needs. And the stars, the galaxies, and everything has a design. And where there is a design, there is a designer. If there were dust, we could say there is no design. But when a house has been built from these raw materials, there is a building, a beautiful building, some architect must have made the design. And since there is design in this world, leave aside the planning, the administration, the management and everything, but there is design. They call it the argument from design. And since there is a design, and it is perfect. If the eyes were, instead of being here, if they were, one were here and another was there, what would happen? And if the ears were in our back, instead of being here. See, just think, things would be funny. They say everything is in its proper place. And as everyone who knows certain things would design them to our best benefit, so also we find there must be a designer behind it. And that designer is God. And therefore we must believe. If he is not there, who designed it? So therefore they believe on this. Now this is the other value they say, that there should be design. Things should be in their proper place, not at sixes and sevens. Things in a regular form, and so on. Then the others are the who give the other argument. Now, as these people say there is design, the other kind of people say there is no design. You see, if there were any designs, there are alternatives to it. The artists can make more beautiful trees than the actual trees. With their color and brush and canvas, they can paint gardens which perhaps do not exist, and they would be more attractive than things like that. Things could have been better, they say. Even if there is design, it's not the perfect design. So we don't agree that there is a designer behind it and there is God behind it. Now another kind of people say that there must be a creator. Someone has created all this. And therefore this is the argument from creator. They don't understand the meaning of the word creator. Otherwise they say, how we came into existence? Everything which is in existence has been created by something, someone. So the world also must have been created by someone. So that is the argument from creation and creator. And therefore they believe that God is there. He has created the world. Now those who are non-believers, they say, this is an argument in the circle. If everything was created by God, and without any creator being there, nothing could be created. We ask, who created God? If you say no one created God, they would say then your argument falls to the ground. Because you started from this, you began to say that God created because everything is a creation. Everything is not created, a creator. Creator is one. Others are creation. There may be a pot maker. He has a moving wheel. He has some clay. And he makes so many flasks and tumblers and other things. Gives them design and other things. He creates them. Otherwise that clay was lying where it was. This one is creator. He has creativity. You see. So, there is a creator. If that be so, they say, the non-believers, then who created God? So if you say, no, God was not created by anyone, they would say, then your argument is not valid. Because on the one hand, you say that everything has a creator, and then we come to question about the creator of God, you stop at that, and you say there is no creator, you see. So you are defeating your own argument. Contradicting your own argument. So we don't believe in this. So these are the people who say like this. And then there are people who say that after creating the world, these people who are non-believers, after creating the world, if God is a creator, if He is a designer, if He is a planner, if He is a manager, an administrator, if He is the wisest person, after creating, where has He gone? What is He doing? Is He asleep? Sitting tight in a particular corner doing nothing? The world is miserable, suffering very deeply, and He is just sitting tight. He does not feel moved. What kind of heart He has, if at all He has a heart? You see, that is the question. Therefore they say He must be a cruel person. That again is the argument. Why does He not take care of the world which He created? So they don't believe in God. Then there are other people who give another kind of argument. That is called the argument of the first cause. There is cause to everything. There is nothing without a cause, they say. Cause is the perfect law of nature, some of them say. Every event is caused, everything is caused, and this whole world is caused. But who is the original cause? This thing happened to that cause, this previous thing happened to another cause before it. Now that thing happened still due to another cause preceding it. Now this will cause another thing which will succeed it. Of course, there is cause to everything. But if there is cause to everything, they say God is the first cause who created all this. So then again they say if God is the first cause and if everything has a cause, then what was the cause that led God to create the world? He must have had a cause in His mind. He wanted to have some plaything. He had some desire to be fulfilled. He wanted some kind of tamasha, some kind of a play going round Him and He looking at Him, like a movie film and somebody looking at the screen. So just tell us, what is the cause? And they say there seems to be no cause, there seems to be no purpose. Then other kind of people say there is a meaning behind the world. It is not all meaningless. The only thing, when we find that something has no meaning, perhaps we don't understand it. But later we discover there is a meaning, you see. Even in many parts of the body, people used to say it is redundant, useless. For example, appendix. They used to say it is appended to the body, something which is not required. Because man descended from the ape, so it has been hanging on to him for this. So it can be cut off and thrown away. I think about 101 things they said which are useless. There is a long list about it in medical jargon. But later on they discovered, no, it has its importance. It has some function, some role. So they said that there is something which is, there is a meaning, there is a purpose. So whatever is happening in the world is meaningless, purposeless, is a question. If it is meaningless, then why we are in our all pursuits, worldly pursuits? What for we are running here and there? Why what we are doing, you see. So they say there is a meaning, there is a purpose, and we must discover it. And God gave the meaning to it. It's something meaningful we must know. And as I said, the other people say, there is no meaning. There are many things which have no meaning. So they give so many examples to illustrate that it is all meaningless, useless. What is this happening? But others say the mountains in their place, the rivers and the oceans in their place, the climates different from country to country, all have the meaning. They are supporting each other and so on. But others say that this is meaningless. It could be in some other way also. So it is not that this meaning has been given to something. So this is what I have to say about the people who have that philosophical background and inclination. And one thing in addition to this, what they say is, the unmoved mover, everything is in motion in this world. Nothing is absolutely static. The galaxies, the sun, the stars, the earth, everything is moving. Since they are moving, everything is moving. Even when I am sitting in this sofa, not moving, but since the earth is moving, I am sharing that movement. So I am also moving, though apparently I am not moving, but scientifically explained, I am also moving. So everything is moving. So how these things came into motion, they say. Somebody started the movement, you see. Like a merry-go-round, just moving. Somebody just first starts, makes it move, and then maybe for some time it keeps moving. But if that man disappears from the scene, you would say, there is no mover. But there was a mover who just started it. He had gone somewhere. So there is God who is the first mover. And He is an unmoved mover. He has moved everything, but He Himself does not move. So again they give contradictory argument. One is that God moves everything. And like the clay, like the pot maker moves the wheel, you know, on which he makes the pot. And on the pot is the vessel which he is making of clay. That also moves. There is an iron bar with him, which also moves, with which he moves these things. But when he moves this, he himself also moves. It is not that he can move that wheel without himself moving, you see. So, but in the case of God, they say he is the unmoved mover. Why they say he is unmoved mover? Because if you say that he also moves, then the question arises, who moves him? If he moved everything and mover is required to move the things, then who moved God? Because you know in physics, there is Newton's second law, and it says everything remains in its state of motion, or it remains static, unless and until an outside agency, an outside force, either keeps it moving or stops it, you see. So, that argument is there. But then the question is, who moved God? How He moves? And how can you say without moving? Because He must be imparting His energy to move things. It is only transference of energy. When something moves, it is because you apply some force. You move the thing, you spend energy on it. That energy can be measured. So if God moves certain things, He must be spending some energy and Himself moving. So if you say He is an unmoved mover, impossible. We don't believe in such a God. So these are some kinds of arguments which are given for and against the belief in God by people who have philosophical intent, philosophical bent of mind. And now I would talk about the things. Now I was telling you that there is some value underlying it in those who believe that God exists and those who believe that God doesn't exist. And if you just go into all the argument, you will find there are certain values underlying it. But not dwelling much on it, I would say some of the values I already pointed out. That He is wise, He manages things, He administers things, so on and so forth. But in other cases, there are other values. And they therefore think He is almighty. If He is an unmoved mover, those who believe in this, they see the almighty. Similarly, as I said earlier, they believe that God is the wisest. So all the attributes which are given to God, people have a different background why they give these arguments and these values. When we say God is almighty, we say it with a different meaning. But when they say almighty, they think one who creates everything, systematizes everything, organizes everything, must be having so much of power, all the powers, power of knowledge, power of movement and so on. So therefore he is almighty. And therefore they say, it is his will with which he is doing it. And therefore, we must surrender to his will. Whatever he does it for the best. You will find that such kind of people, they think everything happens because God does it. Every leaf of the tree moves because God moves it, because he is the mover, you see. So, patta patta Bhagwan hilata hai. God moves every leaf of the tree. And if a child is born, they will say, congratulations, God has given you a child. So, God has parceled him and sent him by email to this one, you see. So, everything they think is happening because of God, you see. Because he is doing everything, in fact. Therefore, they say, we must depend upon his will. Even the Lord's Prayer in the New Testament, thy will be done, as on heaven, so on earth. So, they think God's will must be done. Because his will is the wisest person's will, and we will be foolish to oppose his will, not to believe in it. The best thing will be to surrender to his will, and do whatever he wills. So whatever has happened is okay. Somebody, why? They say, it was God's will. God called this person, this soul, back to him. It was God's will. Now that person is weeping that I had a young son, and that young son has been crushed by a truck and died in a very bad way after suffering for some time in the hospital. He had only vegetative life for certain number of months on certain systems, always being given oxygen and glucose and other things, life-sustaining systems. And after doing all this, spending so much money, and we had so much love for him, and he says, it was God's will. But they say, yes, it was God's will. So why they think it is God's will? Because they think everything is happening because God made it so. He is the mover. He is the first cause. And he is almighty. What he wills must happen. No obstacle can stand in his way. Even if you weep, nothing can happen. Can you do anything? You can't. So therefore, it was his will. You tried your best. You called a good, best physician, you gave him the best medicines, you took care of that person. Still that person died. You willed it otherwise, but God willed it differently. So God's will prevailed. It was God's will, they say. So they ask us also to surrender to God's will. So this is another value kind of thing. If you want to be peaceful, just think that what is ever happening, is according to God's will. He is the wisest, and therefore there is full of wisdom, whatever is happening. Baba explains to us differently. What does the Almighty mean? What is his will? Baba says, Shrimat is his will. You must follow Shrimat. Shrimat is the laws of spiritual lifetime. And he tells us those laws. So you must obey his will. So this is the will you must obey. But they are telling us that whatever happens is according to his will, therefore you keep silent. Shut up. Don't talk. Don't move. Don't do anything. You see? That is what they say. Just see, the words which they use and which we use are almost the same. But they give different meaning to it and use it in different contexts. While we, what Baba has told us in the light of that, we use it very differently. So this has changed our life. Whereas their life had not gone under transformation because there is a conflict in their mind. On the one hand, they say, yes, God is almighty. It is his will. And he is the wisest. We must obey. On the other hand, they think, how could God do all these things? A small baby is born, and if you ask certain sects, certain religions, now that baby is suffering. From the time of very birth, the person, the child saw the first ray of light in this world, that child is, that baby is suffering, has so many diseases, is crying out because of pain. And if you say it is the will of God, Baba explains to us it is due to our past karmic account. We can understand. If we are being punished, we must have committed a crime for which are being punished. And if we have committed no crime, why should we be punished? They are not giving that kind of a reason why this person is suffering, that he had a previous life and life before that. There is life after life, life before life. And it is because of our karmic account that we suffer or we enjoy. That explanation they don't give. They just say it is due to God's will. When they say like that, then those who are non-believers, actually they were not non-believers, all of them, they protest. They say, you are foolish people. God has made this baby so diseased. He is crying, that baby. And you say this is God's will. How could it be? And then again you say God is the wisest, God is merciful, God is peaceful. A person who is peaceful, merciful, plans, manages, systematizes, organizes, so on and so forth, and this baby is crying with severe pain, can't you understand that you are giving two different arguments? On the one hand you say that it was done by God, it is God's will, and on the other hand you can't explain. Even the doctor is trying to give a relief to that baby. Everyone is rushing to be of some help to this baby, even we human beings, who are supposed to be lesser beings, smaller beings, as compared to God. And we are doing something and God is not doing anything, you see. What kind of God you believe in, they say. We don't believe in such a God. Even if there is a God, goodbye to God, you see. Somebody said goodbye to Delhi. And there was a note in the newspaper, letters to the editor, goodbye to Delhi. Delhi is just on the sewers, you see. And so much of environmental pollution, lot of congestion, overpopulated, scarcity of things, traffic is, you know, so on so forth. So, I am now shifted from Delhi. So he said goodbye to Delhi, you see. Because he no longer liked Delhi. Then somebody wrote to him another letter to the editor. Mr. So-and-so has said that he has left Delhi. He has done the right thing, the proper thing. I also want to do the same thing. But where has he gone, he has not mentioned. If he tells me where has he gone, I also would shift to that place. You see. So, let him reply in your paper. So they say goodbye to God. Goodbye to God, why? If God is giving pain to small innocent babies, because they say it is innocent. But we know now he is innocent. But previously he must have done something. He is carrying a load of karmic account on his head. That is why all this is happening. When you say there is no thing without a cause, this pain also must have a cause. And what is the cause? Our own action. If the court gives some punishment to the son and the father says, you give up giving this punishment to my son, instead you can punish me. They will say, we can't. Why? Because they will say, he committed the crime, not you. We have to punish a person who committed the crime. Not because he has done something and therefore you do it. To rob Peter and to pay Paul, that is not what we are going to do, they would say. So how is it that God is giving them lot of suffering without any reason when you say he is innocent? So they don't believe in him. Now we come to bhaktas, you see. As I was saying earlier, now Baba has told us certain things in new light. New light, altogether new light, which takes us to golden age, is able to transform this world. Baba says, there are three eternal and indestructible things, souls, matter, and God. Each one has a different place in the scheme of things. Each one has a different role. So, certain things are happening according to laws of nature. Why many scientists say there is no need for God? Even Napoleon had asked Napoleon Bonaparte as to who is God. I forget at this moment the name of the scientist in his days belonging to France. And he said, but why you ask about God? There is no purpose because there is no God. We do not need God for explaining things. We can explain you on the basis of chemistry, physics, biology, mathematics. God is not required for any explanation at all. Because what has been happening is those who are believers, they think that whatever is happening is doing to God. For example, the movement of the leaves of the tree, God is moving them, as if God has no other work to do. There are so many trees, how he moves, he must be a magician, you see. A very big magician moving trees in all the places, all the countries at the same time, you see. It is moving because the wind is blowing. This is the explanation. Why you say there must be a mover behind it, you see. It is foolish. So the scientists said that there is explanation without bringing in God, the concept of God, any whatsoever, you see. It's not needed. The reason is that they have been confusing nature with God. So there are three entities, eternal, uncreated. Eternal means uncreated. Those who have always been and always will be. And those which are indestructible. They always remain, as I said, they will always be. Souls, matter and God. Therefore, I thought I better write a book on soul, eternal drama of souls, matter and God. That led me to think of that title. Because actually it is the interplay of all these three. People not understanding who is doing what. So, there are certain things which are done by nature. There are laws of nature. And laws of nature make certain things happen. If we heat potassium chlorate along with manganese dioxide, the oxygen comes out. Anybody can take a spirit lamp and a test tube and do the experiment and do physical and chemical tests on it and find that it is a gas which is supporter of combustion, which has no taste, no color, nothing, as the qualities of oxygen are. Now, it is because potassium chlorate has oxygen. Otherwise, it could not come out of nothing. The thing is there. But when you heat it to a particular temperature and you use manganese dioxide as a catalytic agent, then it happens. So it is nature, you see. Where does God come in? It is not that God is doing this. He is giving you oxygen out of potassium chlorate, you see. So Baba says, Kudrat. In many Murlis you will find this word Kudrat. It is a Persian word, Urdu word, Sindhi word, Kudrat, nature. But there is difference between nature and Kudrat. Kudrat is wonders of nature. The laws of nature are really wonderful, fantastic, very incomprehensible, because there are so many, they are so deep. All this wonderful thing, the flowers growing in a particular design, it is not that God is giving them design. Their seed has those genetic possibilities which make them manifest in that kind of flower. Their seed has got all those. You see, now people discovered that every plant or every human being or every living being has a genetic system, a genome. You see, people previously didn't know it. They have different color, different smell out of them. Isn't it wonder? A beauty, thing of beauty, jaya forever. So it is due to Kudrat. It's not that God is doing it. So they are confusing God with Kudrat. You see. So God has explained us, there are souls, there is matter, there is God. And if you want to add this or make it more clear, you can say Kudrat. Kudrat means wonders of nature, because of the inherent laws of nature, some of which we have been able to discover, many of which we do not yet understand, we have yet to discover. You see, Kudrat. And Baba says, when you violate the laws of nature, then there is suffering. For example, we should take particular kinds of meals, certain liquid, certain, say, water, particular number of times a day, in a particular quantity. Our food should be balanced. It should have from proper elements of nutrition, because the body, various parts of body require various things. If we don't have it, we suffer. So either we suffer because of violating the laws of nature, or we suffer because of violating the laws of morality, ethics, the principles which govern the soul. One are the laws which govern the matter, energy, forces. The other are the laws which govern the souls. If we violate those laws, we suffer. Maybe we violate it today, or we violate it in our earlier life. But we are punished because of violating those laws. And those laws themselves have so inherent potential in them, that they cause us suffering. It is not that God makes us suffer. If, for example, we don't take proper nutrition, the end result is that those parts of the body will be undernourished, malnourished, and then therefore we suffer. Where does God come in? Why to blame God? This person got diseased because God willed it so. Wrong. So we suffer because of these two reasons Baba has explained us. Either we violate laws of nature, or we violate the laws of which govern the soul. And where does God come in? God gives us the knowledge of these laws. He liberates us from pain, from suffering, from sorrows. Because He tells us the moral laws, the ethical code, the Shrimat as we call it, how we should behave, how we should act, how should our consciousness be, and how our lifestyle should be, what our relationship should be with the nature, with the other human beings, with the animal kingdom, and so on and so forth. He gives us all this kind of knowledge, and knowledge liberates us. That is how He liberates us from suffering. That is why God is needed. God is no doubt the liberator from these, but He does it because He gives us this kind of knowledge. You are saying that God is knowledgeful because He knows geology, astronomy, physics, chemistry, so on and so forth. But we say He may or may not be. That is a different concern. The present thing which we are discussing is how to eliminate sorrow from our life, suffering from our life. That is our immediate purpose for knowing God. And we should know that God can do it. He can liberate us from suffering by giving us that kind of knowledge, that kind of wisdom, that kind of guidance, that kind of help which enables us to be liberated from this. So Baba has given us this explanation. And then I will talk now about bhaktas. Now, bhaktas say that there is God. There is no need for us to convince us, to give any arguments, because we already believe. There is some kind of, some thought in our mind which tells us there is God. But we want to be liberated from sins. Many bhaktas worship God because they think God only can liberate them from sins. He is the purifier. He alone can make us free from our past and present sins, make us pure and holy. You see. So therefore they worship God. So these bhaktas assert on the value of purity. And they think God is merciful. He is holiest of the holy. He is the purest. So they find these values in God. Merciful, purest, holiest, and one who liberates us from sin. Therefore they want to know God, how to contact Him, how to experience Him, how to get this kind of help from Him. They don't know. They say we don't know. We only worship Him so that there may be His grace on us. He may do something for us. Just to invoke His help, we do all this. So, their emphasis is on getting freedom from sins, considering God as the purest person. Then, others, they have mental disturbance, mental storms, some sorrows, sufferings, and they think, they feel that they are surrounded on all sides by selfish people. The world is so selfish. They very often mention, we gave love to this man, we helped him in his time of need, and he was our good friend. But when we required this kind of help from him, he turned away from us. There was no longer any friendship. Therefore they say there are so many kinds of friends, cupboard friends. Those when they come to your house, they see what is in your cupboard. You see, any toli, some other material, they are cupboard friends. You see, if you don't give them tea, serve them some ice cream or Coca-Cola for a number of days, they won't come. They come because they look at your cupboard. You see. Then there are fair weather friends, so on and so forth. I am not going to say much about the kinds of friends today. That is not the topic. But what I am saying is that these people find the world is such. They are very harsh. They have no love, no sincerity. They don't help when we have no friends who are friends actually in our need. You see, they say a friend in need is a friend indeed. So therefore they are no friends indeed. So they think that God is the one who can help us. And they believe there is a karmic account. The bhaktas believe that we are suffering not because it is God's will, but because we have been doing certain things which we should not have done. We are sinners. Therefore we are suffering. That they agree. But they say, He alone can now liberate us from our karmic account. Therefore they call God as liberator and as redeemer. Previously I talked about sins. One who redeems from sins, that is redemption. So God is the redeemer from sins, purifier. And this one now I am saying the liberator. The one who liberates us from our past karmic account. That vicious circle. So, that is why they think of God. And then they think God is also the savior. Savior in the sense, so that we may not commit any sins later, from now onwards. We should be good persons. So He can save us from our sins. From our faltering gait, from our faltering walk. He can lend us support. Nahi inko raah dikhao Prabhu. Ghar ghar thokar khaun main, there is a song in Hindi. Saying, Oh God, you see, you must help me. Without that, who will save me? I will fall into a pitch, into a pit. So, God is also the savior. He is the redeemer. He is the liberator, the purifier, and also the savior. Therefore, they think of God. Then others feel that they are victimized. They are persecuted. Some people are unnecessarily troubling them, harassing them, causing them pain. They feel that for no wrong done by them, they are just being followed and being given some pain and suffering. They are being victimized. And therefore they think there is no justice in this world. But there must be someone who does the justice. These worldly courts, worldly people, worldly families, heads of villages, other people from whom we expect the justice, they are not doing it. They have some kind of favoritism for certain people, not just and impartial, you see. So they think ultimately God will do the justice. So they think that God has this quality of doing justice. Therefore they remember God. Oh God, we love you. There is no justice in this world. But we know that a day will come when they will be judged. Now Christians, Muslims, Jews, they say that there will be a day of judgment. After the doomsday, everyone will rise from the grave, and then there will be justice. But everyone in one form or the other believes God does perfect justice. No favoritism with him. No recommendations. No advocates can enter into his court. Not allowed. Those persons wearing black coats, you see. White ties, black coats. And asking people to enter into perjury, to tell lies on oath. It is actually the advocates which teach their clients to tell falsehood in order that they may win the case, you see. Actually, they are supposed to help the court. They are also considered to be officials of the court. But they are obstacles in the way of justice, actually. Because they have delaying tactics, getting postponement, and asking people to tell the lie. See, give false evidence. It's a profession. They say the tongue has no bone. You can turn it this way or that way. You see. Today they are giving one argument, tomorrow these people give the opposite argument in the case of another client. If you ask them why you do this, they will say, but the tongue has no bone. You can turn it this way or that way. Because why? God made it so. God willed it so. You see, God the poor fellow is caught in everything. So they think that God does justice. So many bhaktas worship him because of that. Certain others worship him for some occult powers. Some power, you see. They think God, being almighty, has many powers. If we approach him, worship him, please him, he becomes happy with us. We serve him, offer him fruits, ring bells for him in order to make him feel happy, so on and so forth. Perform dance before him, show him the incense sticks and other things. When he gets good smell through his nose, you know, maybe he becomes happy, gives us some power, you see. They are after that power. So they misinterpret the word Almighty, thinking that he has all occult powers, and he will give at least one of them, you see. God no doubt has all these powers, and maybe some of them, by worshipping him, may get, perhaps. They say they do. But Baba tells us differently, I'll come to that later. Then others feel tormented. They have lot of mental tension. In the family there is conflict. Break up in the family. There are adverse circumstances. They feel so disturbed. Some of them go for drugs, others for intoxicating things. And others worship God. They worship God, oh God, give us peace. So they assault on the value of peace, and they think God is the ocean of peace. So he will give us peace. Because in earlier days, when the service just started, Baba asked all of us to have some kind of a book and form book. When anyone comes for getting this knowledge, comes to this institution, ask him to fill up this form. introductory form, the first form, and the form had many questions. And one of these questions was, why you worship God? Why you seek God? Why you want to know God? That will tell you why he wants this. That will also reveal to you what is the value which he asserts. You see, he wants peace. So if you just tell him of other things, he is not interested. He is interested in peace. So they think that God is all peaceful and ocean of peace, and they will get it from him. Then others have problems, many problems. They do business, put money, invest money, and invest a lot of money with all the planning and all, everything. But things go other way. They suffer a huge loss for one reason or the other. Why is happening this? We know how to do business. People used to come to us for getting our counsel, our consultation. And today these things are happening with us. They deposit money in banks and the banks fail. They purchase a property. Somebody puts it on fire. There is a riot. There is arson. Things have happened. They are in a country very prosper, having a lot of money. And what happens is that the government asks that particular nationality people to get out of their country. As it happened in Burma, for example. Communism came there. So happened in Cambodia. So also in many other countries, in African countries, you see. So people had to run for their life, for their safety, leaving everything behind. So they think there are so many problems. Who will help us? Human beings can't help us. So they want to worship God. Oh God, help us please. You alone can help us. You can do that kind of help which no one else can do. Then there are others who say, oh God, lead us from darkness to light. Tamaso ma jyotirgame. Lead us from darkness to light. And lead us to immortality from mortality. Mrityor ma amritam game. Asado ma sadgame. From unreality to reality. We are not after wealth, not after money, nor we ask you for any other thing. But give us these three. Because if you give us these three, they include everything. Because whatever the sufferings are, they are due to our ignorance. Because we are in darkness. Dardar thokar khaun mein, as I said earlier. So give us light. Oh kindly light, lead us, they say. God is light. He gives us enlightenment. So they are after enlightenment. Buddha was after enlightenment. Some people have this the greatest value, enlightenment, self-enlightenment, illumination, the illumination of the soul, so that the soul blooms fully, in full glare, in its original shine. That is what they want. So they pray for this. And when they prayed for problems, they thought God is compassionate. So they think God is compassionate. Their assertion is on the value of compassion. Rehm dil. Karuna ka sagar, daya ka sagar. They say. No other person is compassionate more than God is. So you can seek help from him in your days of adversity, when you are suffering. When everyone has left you in the lurch, he alone can come to your help and rescue. No one else. Ek bal ek bharosa, therefore depend only on him. Others are undependable because they are the people themselves suffering. How will they will help you? Those who are not liberated, how can they liberate you? Anyone tied to a tree and you ask, you say, you just open the knots of my ties and liberate me. He will say, but can't you see I myself am tied to the tree. How can I liberate you? So that one can liberate who himself is ever liberated. When they say God is the liberator, it means he is ever liberated. Baba asked us to use the word ever with all the qualities of God. Not only peaceful, ever peaceful. There are some people also peaceful, But they are not ever peaceful. Blissful, not ever blissful. Loveful, but not always loveful. Today they love you, they are full of love. Tomorrow they hate you. They have rivalry, jealousy, or something, you see. So Baba used to say, whenever you write certain qualities or attributes of God, use this word ever. And therefore, if you want to be ever happy, if you want to go into a world where there is ever happiness, eternal spring, no sorrow at all for generations, God alone can do it. Because He has all those attributes with the prefix ever. So, they seek God's help because of this. Now, those who think that He can lead us from darkness to light and so on, they call God as our guide. Therefore, they consider God in that form. Our Guru, Sadguru. Guru Naam Guru. He is the Guru of the Gurus. The Sacha Baha Guru. He is the one, the true Guru, who helps us to go from light, from darkness. Others think that God blesses. He gives gifts. There are some people in this world who are God gifted. They do things so easily. They have a knack of doing things. They have some kind of a command on certain things. They say that they are not ordinary. Some people call them genius. But others say not only genius. He is God gifted. Therefore, what we can't do, even after doing so hard labor, He can do in a twinkle, very easily. God gifted. So having learned that God blesses and gives gifts, they say, God, bless us with wealth. O God, bless us with health. O God, bless us with a son. O God, bless us with a house. So on and so forth. Give us some gift, long life and so on. So they consider as God as giving a giver of blessings. And Kripalu, they say Kripalu. He does Kripa. Kripa means He does blessing. Without any reason He does blessing. Maybe that you have done something, therefore somebody blesses you. He gives you gift because you have done so much good to Him. He feels obliged, feels moved. He loves, and therefore out of love He gives you something. But in the case of God, it is His nature. Bholanath. Anyone who comes to Him, He gives him gifts. Without even those who oppose Him, those who think that there is no God, those who speak against Him, even if such a person who is a hardcore atheist, who criticizes those people who are theists, if that person also enters into the court of God, God will say, bless him, bless him. He blesses everyone, you see. So these people seek blessings from God.